Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Well, I guess I'm not supposed to be here. It's supposed to be Tim. That's okay. Tim Wildman away today. Fred Jackson sitting in for Tim. Pleasure to do so on this another busy day. And to help me through all the stories we have to cover today, we have Chris Woodward from American Family News. Chris, welcome.
Good morning.
Good to have you. And Steve Jordahl also with us from the newsroom. Steve, good morning to you.
And good morning to you.
We are all ready to go. We are watching at this hour the very, very slow progress of Hurricane Sally. Just watching an update a few moments ago, this thing is moving at 2 miles per hour. And so the center of it is not going to come ashore. It looks like around Biloxi, Mississippi right now, until sometime early tomorrow morning. But the they say it's going to come ashore as a Category 1. Get up to, I think, Category 2 late yesterday. But the big danger that folks are very concerned about is the rainfall. They are now predicting upwards of 30 inches of rain being dumped primarily on the Gulf Coast of Mississippi over to Mobile, Alabama, and into the Florida Panhandle. It looks like New Orleans is going to miss most of this, which is a blessing for those folks.
Right.
But down as you go along the Gulf Shores, Biloxi, the various communities there, they are all bracing. As we told you yesterday, mandatory evacuations were put in place yesterday to get some of those folks out of there. That is, like most of the Gulf Coast, very low-lying area. And when you're talking 30 inches of rain over maybe a two-day period, that can do a lot of damage.
Yeah. The president did a tweet not long ago. My team and I are closely monitoring extremely dangerous Hurricane Sally. We are fully engaged with state and local leaders to assist the great people of Alabama, Louisiana, and Mississippi. Be ready and listen to state and local leaders. He attached the Twitter accounts for Governor Kay Ivey of Alabama, Louisiana's Governor John Bel Edwards, as well as Tate Reeves, the governor of Mississippi.
Yeah, there's been emergency declarations declared already to ensure that federal forces are able to get in. Of course, many of them are still busy over in Lake Charles, Louisiana from Hurricane Laura just a few weeks ago. So be praying for those dear folks along our coast, our Gulf Coast. It's amazing. Just looked at the larger picture right now. There are a lot of storms coming across from the west coast of Africa right now and moving along. And there's one that's over Bermuda, and there's another couple trailing in behind. One in particular could be a problem for the east coast of the United States. So when they, you know, some years, Chris and Steve, they predict a lot of storms and it doesn't happen. But this year, if the prediction was for a lot of storms, there was exactly right. It is a busy, busy year in the Atlantic and in the Gulf. And so we've already had Hurricane Laura, and now we've got Hurricane Sally. So as I say, be praying for these folks. They're going to need our prayers. They're going to need the help of a lot of volunteers for groups such as 8 Days of Hope, Samaritan's Purse, and others who I know are busy already. But I know they always seek to help out where they can.
I do want to point out hurricane season generally runs from the 1st of June to the end of November. So we're still in the middle of hurricane season. This is not abnormal in terms of having a hurricane at this particular time. And as far as predictions go, we had anywhere from 19 to 25 named storms just a couple of months ago on various news outlets that were all quoting the hurricane prediction centers and the experts on these issues.
All right. We'll keep an eye on that, of course. Yesterday, when we opened up our program, we focused on Pastor John MacArthur at Grace Community Church in California. It was the first Sunday after the Los Angeles County Superior Court ruled against the church and basically told the church you couldn't have inside services. And we heard Pastor MacArthur outline for his congregation, and we played it. It was about 2 minutes of various points that the county had ordered that the church could not do, basically. Inside services, they had to register people. They're coming in. They had to not only social distancing of people, but also of cars in the parking lot, and on it went. And as we know now, the pastor did go ahead and hold services. Well, what's really interesting, there was a development late yesterday afternoon from U.S. District Judge William Stickman IV. In the case of Pennsylvania, there the governor, Tom Wolf, he is a Democrat. And basically, this federal judge said the pandemic conditions that the governor there put in place were basically unconstitutional. U.S. District Judge William Stickman IV, who was appointed by President Trump, sided with plaintiffs that included hair salons, drive-in movie theaters, farmers market vendor, horse trainer, and several Republican office holders in their lawsuit against Wolf. The ruling found that Wolf's restrictions that required people to stay at home placed size limits on gatherings and ordered non-life-sustaining businesses to shut down were unconstitutional. And the justice went on to say the Wolf administration's pandemic policies have been overreaching, arbitrary, and violated citizens' constitutional right. The justice went on to say, the judge went on to say, the governor's efforts to slow the spread of the coronavirus were undertaken with good intention of addressing a public health emergency. But even in an emergency, the judge said, the authority of government is not unfettered. So you have a very, very different point of view between what's being experienced in California and what this U.S. District Judge has ruled on there in Pennsylvania. I want to play you a little bit of what Laura Ingraham at Fox News had to say last night about this ruling. It's cut number 11, Brent.
Now, it was a phenomenal ruling, and we've been telling you this for months. Our constitutional rights may not be indefinitely abridged by executive fiat, period. Now, I expect similar challenges to be launched in other blue states by businesses, parents, schools, and churches who at this point are just fed up with being shut down.
Yeah, there you have it, Laura Ingraham. And so we now, Chris and Steve, we'll get your comments on this. We now have a situation where a U.S. district judge has made a ruling that these restrictions, now I'm not sure if these challenges had been made 4 or 5 months ago, whether the judge would have the same ruling, but we're now 6 months into this, and what they're saying is that governors don't have the right, at least according to this judge, don't have the right to go this far in shutting down businesses, telling businesses or what capacity of business they can have. This judge, appointed by Donald Trump, and our boss Tim Wildman would say elections have consequences, but this judge is saying that these restrictions, these edicts put in place by this governor, were unconstitutional. Chris, it's going to be interesting to see where this goes.
Yeah, it will. And, you know, Governor Wolf's office has already said he's going to appeal. So that will, you know, the story's not over with yet. What's interesting, though, is that you'll get the exact opposite ruling in another part of the country. For instance, you mentioned the ruling in L.A. Superior Court there. That is at some point going to be challenged to a higher court, if you will. And we'll probably get something to the exact opposite, which would normally mean the Supreme Court's going to have to weigh in. But we kind of already have an idea of where the Supreme Court is on this issue. For example, a couple of months ago, the Supreme Court declined to intervene in a case out of Nevada against COVID-19 restrictions. Now, that case is still coming up through the courts, and some people have told me, well, you know, the court didn't want to weigh in now. It's too early. They want to wait and see what lower courts have to say and things like that. But you know, the Supreme Court's term begins in a couple of weeks. They're still going to do things virtually, I assume. And it may be months before we even get a case at the U.S. Supreme Court, which would most likely mean we wouldn't get a ruling until June or July of next year.
Steve, what Chris is mentioning, timing is important here. And I think the issue is, if this pandemic continues on, how much further can these edicts go? Before they start interfering with people's First Amendment rights.
Well, they already have been interfering, according to this judge in Pennsylvania.
That's true.
I spoke with Matt Staver a couple weeks ago of Liberty Counsel down in Florida. He's got multiple lawsuits going with regard to religious liberty challenges and other kinds of challenges from this. And he said he's now none of these decisions have been as decisive as this one that we just were talking about out of Pennsylvania, but he says he's got two or three of them already to the appeals court level and expects them to be fairly quickly looked at by the Supreme Court if they decide to see them at all.
Yeah. And once again, we point out there is a difference between laws and edicts that are issued by governors. As we've been reporting, there are various county sheriffs who have said, we're not going to carry out edicts. In other words, we're not going to go arrest a pastor who is not abiding by an edict. Mm-hmm. A law is different from these edicts, directives, whatever you want to call it. So this story, as they say, ain't over yet.
Right.
As we go further along down the road and you have these conflicting rulings from courts, as you say, Chris, it's going to end up in the Supreme Court.
Yeah, it will. And to Steve's point about Matt Staver having cases at the appeals court level, there is currently a story on OneNewsNow.com about a case that Matt is handling involving a church in Maine. Here's what's interesting about this. Staver points out that there's a church there, Calvary Chapel of Bangor. They have a ministry that helps people with substance abuse issues. And as part of the substance abuse program, people are allowed to gather for Bible studies and counseling, things like that. That is considered a social service in the state of Maine and therefore is allowed.
Hmm.
And as part of the program, these people also attend church services, but the church is not allowed to have church services.
Oh.
So you can treat the people with substance abuse problems, but in
a room.
Exactly. But you can't have a religious meeting, and I'm doing air quotes for those not watching on video, you can't have a religious meeting with the same people.
Yeah. You know, I have to think, Steve, a lot of this is being made up. These rules are being made up as we roll along. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's almost, in the California case, when I heard the pastor read those restrictions the other day, it's almost like you had people sitting in a room saying, how far can we go with this? Now, do we want to make sure the cars are separated in the parking lot by one slot. And we want to make sure that there is our bathroom regulations on how many people can use the church bathrooms at once. And on it went.
It seems exactly that, that somebody is, you know, it seems to be, and this is, people can dispute this, it's arguable, but it seems to be that it's in the Democrat DNA to use government to control. We see it in the difference between red states and blue states in some of these, the way that they're dealing with this pandemic. California, totally restrictive, you know, a state like Mississippi. Well, we're going to suggest you do some things, but we're really leaving it up to you. Figure that you're intelligent people and you don't want to die, so do what you need to do. It does seem like it's dividing along political lines, by my account.
You know, the thing real quick about MacArthur and wanting people to space out in the parking lot as far as parking their cars, remember it was about 3 weeks ago that the county took away a portion of the parking lot that they kind of had a friendly agreement with the church. The church was using a portion of property that was, they were using it for parking. And now the same government is saying you got to space out in a smaller parking lot.
It never ends. Macy's Day Parade.
Yes.
The balloons will be on the street.
The turkey show must go on.
But there'll be no people.
Yeah.
De Blasio. Hey, no people allowed to show up.
Well, I'm sure he'll be there. In some weird way, he'll reason it out. But yeah, that was a story today on CNN. The Macy's Turkey Day Parade or Thanksgiving Day Parade will go on, but without spectators.
Have you guys been watching any football at all? It's been weird to listen to the fake crowd noise.
Oh, I know. NHL has been doing that too. Just drives me nuts.
They had a live interview on a Major League Baseball game on Sunday night. I was watching between the Dodgers and the Astros, and the announcers were interviewing a guy on the field, one of the Astros players, Actually, he was in the dugout by this point, but the crowd noise was so loud he couldn't hear what the people were asking him, and it was the most uncomfortable segment I've seen in a while.
Just stop.
Yeah.
Just stop.
We all know nobody's there.
With the sound effects. We really don't need that kind of stuff.
I just want to hear, "You're a bum," in a baseball game. It's not real until I hear that.
If Peyton Manning was there, we'd hear a bunch of Omahas, that's for sure.
Omaha!
All right, Chris, onward forward with your first story.
I've had my third pot of coffee, so I'm good to go here.
You're ready to go.
All right, President Trump, we're going to hear a lot about him today. It's an historic moment for the Trump administration. They're going to have representatives from the UAE, United Arab Emirates, and also, I believe, the royal family from Bahrain, if I'm saying that nation's name correctly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're going to be at the White House. They've recently entered into an agreement in which they will recognize the nation of Israel. They're going to do some diplomatic ties. Things of that nature. It's one of the reasons why people, I think, had nominated President Trump for one of the Nobel Peace Prizes here just recently. But the president was also on Fox and Friends this morning, and he was talking about his opponent this November, Democratic Party presidential nominee Joe Biden. And as far as his mental faculties, Biden's, the president said he's not equipped to be president. Clip one.
You look at Biden, he's reading notes and he's reading teleprompters all the time, and he doesn't read them well. And during interviews, he's doing an interview, and he's reading a question. I saw it 2-3 weeks ago. I said, I think he's reading a teleprompter. They're asking him a question, and I watched. And then when his guy gets asked about that, he, makes a fool out of himself, and he can't answer the question because he knows it's true.
It was a yes or no question. It would have been easy to answer.
No, I've never seen anything like it. Nobody has. The man is shot. Let's face it. We can't have a man who's shot because, who's not shot? Putin, President Xi, Kim Jong-un, they're not shot. They're world-class chess players. This guy is shot. Everyone knows it.
Now, as far as him being shot, he's basically saying Biden is spent. Like, he's not all there. Mm-hmm. He can't serve, things like that. Which brings us into another piece of interesting sound that Steve contributed to our stack today, as he always does. Steve, tell us what the Democratic Party vice presidential nominee,
Kamala Harris, is in. So we had I have a couple things actually to play about this. Let me start with our illustrious Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, who was you mentioned that there's a Bahrain deal, mm-hmm. or a Middle East deal that's on its way today. Wolf Blitzer actually asked Nancy Pelosi, "What do you think? Does President Trump deserve any credit?" I want you to hear how much credit that Pelosi is willing to give Trump for this deal. Cut six.
How much credit do you give the president of the United States for these peace agreements?
Well, hopefully they will be beneficial to the region. We've been waiting for a very long time for the president's proposal for an Israeli-Palestinian peace agreement that honored the two-state solution. It was coming in 2 weeks. It was coming in 2 months. It was coming in 6 months. It still hasn't come in any way that has brought peace. So. Good for him for having a distraction on a day when the numbers of people who are affected and the numbers of people who are dying from this virus only increases.
Yeah, real peace is a distraction. and Chris, you were talking about mm-hmm. this other thing about Biden being able to lead. There was a very revealing moment yesterday from Arizona when Senator Kamala Harris, the vice president, nominee for vice president of the Democrat Party, was talking with small businesses and promising what the administration was going to do for those small businesses. But listen to what she calls this administration. Cut five.
We need to make sure you have a president in the White House who actually sees you, who understands your needs, who understands the dignity of your work, and who has your back. A Harris administration together with Joe Biden as the President of the United States, the Biden-Harris administration will provide access to $100 billion in low-interest loans and investments for minority business owners.
Sigmund Freud rears his ugly head.
Oops. The Harris administration, along with Joe Biden
as president.
I think she knew immediately that she had said something wrong.
Yeah,
she
but
to try to fix it.
You got to think, maybe this is one of those things, You've heard the stories of like a teenage girl will put down, I'm going to be Mrs. John Smith.
Mm.
And you know, that they're dreaming someday of being this person's yeah. wife. Well, I have to think, you know, I don't even would call it a Freudian slip. I would call it, she's been thinking about this.
Yeah.
It came awful easily off of her lips.
Oh, did it ever?
It's one of the reasons why I have thought for a long time why we need to have more than one debate amongst the VP nominees.
Yeah. The Harris administration. Wow. I mean, it feeds in to the, well, some would call it conspiracy theories, but I think there's some meat yeah. on that conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
When you look at, and I know, you know, some would refer to President Trump's remarks about Joe Biden as perhaps a little cruel, but the reality is we have enough of Joe Biden before microphones now over the last couple of months, his difficulty even reading from a teleprompter, mm-hmm. his reluctance to go out and do the kinds of thing that President Trump is doing. And people have been saying, could it be that, you know, Joe Biden is being referred to, maybe even the president did this, as a placeholder, that the Democrats knew that Bernie Sanders was a bit much for the American electorate. So let's put Joe Biden in place, 77-year-old Joe Biden in place, and he'll be at the top of the ticket for this election. But within months, mm-hmm. if they were to win, it would be the Kamala Harris administration.
Yeah.
And so her reference to the Harris administration yesterday, my goodness, you talk about, is this really the thinking of the Democratic Party?
Yeah, there was a, you know, from time to time, the Babylon Bee, which I know is a satirical news outlet, and you should too, but from time to time, they put out headlines that seemed like legit actual news, right? And there was a headline in recent days from the Bee that said, Kamala Harris already looking at a short list of VP nominees.
Yeah.
And this is before yesterday's error.
Yeah, and this kind, you know, this is probably, Steve, not going to be widely reported by the mainstream media, this statement that she made yesterday, because it does feed into the speculation that there is a plan in place by the Democratic mm-hmm. Party. And the last thing that the mainstream media wants, which is totally behind the Democratic Party in this election, they don't want to feed that speculation.
If you hear anything at all about it, which I agree with you, you probably won't hear a thing. But if you do, it's a misspeak. It's, you know, just a one-off and onward with
she's traveling so much, meeting with the American people.
Yes.
She's tired, but she's not done.
You know, it's really interesting, this campaign. There she was yesterday. Was it in Arizona? Yeah, she was in Arizona. She was having a round table. Now, Joe Biden today is going down to Florida. The Democrats are really worried that his numbers with Latinos are very bad.
Yeah.
But he's going down there and doing the same type of thing.
Yeah.
He's doing a round table. There may be eight people in the room,
all sitting within their own circles, six feet from their next neighborly circle. Yeah, there was a USA Today story out today that points out that he has significant polling problems with Cuban Americans, which make up a sizable voting base in the great state of Florida. And based on his troubles with the Cuban American population and their voting base, or that voting base, USA Today seems to think he's in real trouble in Florida just based on that.
And there's just, Steve, there's the image problem. There's Trump this past weekend, rally of what, 30,000 people? And you have Joe Biden. Yesterday, he did this little news conference on climate change. We'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back. He was standing in front of a wheat field.
Yeah, I get really uncomfortable every time I see Joe Biden and Kamala Harris in their masks on TV. For some reason, I know I'm biased, but that just isn't the kind of president I want.
Yeah, it's almost like an admission that this president's going to bunker down if the pandemic continues. I don't know. Anyway, the images are not good for the Democratic Party right now. All right, you're listening to the Tuesday edition of Today's Issues. Fred, Steve, and Chris. We'll be back right after the break.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Abraham Hamilton III.
He who has promised is faithful. Our security and our eternal destination is not contingent upon us. It's contingent upon the one who has granted us the capacity to respond to him. Praise God.
We'll also have news headlines and analysis from American Family News. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
You know, folks asked me about our annual tour of Israel. Tim, is it safe to travel to Israel? To which I respond, we'll only be in New York for a few short hours. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. Israel is actually one of the safest places to be on earth because they take their security so seriously. So we're going to have a wonderful, safe time in Israel in March as we see the Holy Land. The Bible will come to life. Again, that's March 16th through the 24th. If you want the information to find out whether you want to go with us or not, just go to the website, twholyland.com, twholyland.com. If you want a brochure sent to your home, just call us at 800-FAMILIES and leave us your name and address, and we'll get that right in the mail to you. 800-FAMILIES.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Wondering how you'll finish your degree now? At Liberty University, we want to help. So when you transfer into one of our more than 100 undergraduate online programs this fall, you could earn up to $3,600 in transfer student scholarships, or more if you live in Virginia. That means you could pay less than $900 per course and transfer in up to 75% of your degree. That's up to 90 credits. Save time and money at a school that's been helping students like you for over 30 years. Learn more by texting DEGREE to 49595. That's DEGREE to 49595.
Gay rights groups are celebrating a new California law that softens criminal penalties for gay adults who have sex with underage teenagers. Governor Gavin Newsom quietly signed the highly controversial bill into law over the weekend. Now, the law does not legalize pedophilia, but it does give the judge discretion on whether to require a person to register as a sex offender. The law would apply in cases where the victim is between the ages of 14 and 17. Gay rights groups say the law is designed to treat LGBT offenders the same as heterosexual offenders. Now, there was bipartisan opposition. State Representative Lorena Gonzalez is a Democrat. She's also a mom, and she's disgusted by the new law. I think we can all agree that 24-year-olds should not be having sexual relationships with 14-year-olds, gay or straight. Be sure to listen to my daily radio show live noon to 3 Eastern, or you can download my free podcast at toddstarnes.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And indeed, welcome back, Fred Jackson and Chris Woodward and Steve Jordahl. We're all sitting in for Brother Tim today. It takes three of us, really, to take Tim's spot. And we're happy to be with you. And if you want to view the program, Mr. Brent, where do we have to go to do that?
They can go to YouTube or Facebook and type in Today's Issues, and they can watch the video. Or they can go to afr.net and click on podcast, get the podcast. Mm-hmm. And we've also got apps, the AFR app, that okay. they can download and listen to the show.
Anywhere in the world.
Anywhere in the world if they don't have a radio.
Yeah, I know. I know Ray Pritchard, who co-hosts the program from time to time. Ray will be back. We haven't said goodbye to Ray.
Ray's back next week.
He's back next week.
He's out traveling.
He's out preaching and teaching.
That's right.
Doing good things out there. Just a tremendous speaker. But Ray will be back. But I know... he's told the story of being in various parts of the world where he goes and being able, with the app, to tune in to Today's Issues and other programs. It's fantastic, the technology today that we have, and good to take advantage of it. You know, you connect anywhere in the world with American Family Radio. It's a wonderful thing. All right, we were talking about the political campaign and imagery.
Mm-hmm.
So yesterday afternoon, President Trump was in California, and he was at, I'm not sure if it's a National Guard air base or wherever it was, but he was there to honor the air crews who took part in that incredible rescue mm-hmm. into a camp there in California. There were 200 people in this camp. They were trapped by the wildfires out there. And so this crew, against basically people telling them you can't get in there, the smoke is really bad, they had almost zero visibility, but these air crews went in and start rescuing these people out, moms, dads, kids, you name it. And they're rescuing these people, 200 people. They went back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Just incredible bravery to get these people to safety out there. So the president was honoring them yesterday. They had them lined up there. Their families were there in a hangar there at this airfield. So that was the image there. Just a short time later, here was the image of Joe Biden. He was standing, and I'm not stretching the truth here, folks. He was standing in front of what looked like a wheat field.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was somewhere in Delaware.
It was.
It was a wheat field. And all you see is Joe Biden at the podium, and he's obviously reading.
Mm-hmm.
He's reading from a teleprompter, and you're just waiting for him to make a mistake. But what a difference in images. There's the president, and I know he is the president, and he's doing presidential thing by awarding these medals to these brave crew. But he's showing such incredible leadership, and all Joe Biden is doing is standing in a wheat field somewhere condemning the president.
Yeah, yeah. He actually called him a climate arsonist.
Yeah.
Now, Biden took advantage of the wildfires in California being in the news cycle and then Hurricane Sally approaching the Gulf Coast states. He took advantage of that to once again sound the alarm over what Biden believes is man-made climate change or global warming as a result of our use of fossil fuels and things like that. So he used that opportunity to stand at the podium and stare straight at something while he was calling the president a climate arsonist. We actually have some sound here of Biden to that effect. It's clip 8.
Wildfires are burning the suburbs in the West. Floods are wiping out suburban neighborhoods in the Midwest. Hurricanes are imperiling suburban life along our coast. If we have 4 more years of Trump's climate denial, how many suburbs will be burned in wildfires? How many suburban neighborhoods will have been flooded out? How many suburbs will have been blown away in superstorms? If you give a climate arsonist 4 more years in the White House, why would anyone be surprised if we have more America ablaze?
You know, here, when I actually listened to that Biden speech yesterday, and Steve, we'll get your comments on it in just a second, but I thought, is this the first wildfires on the West Coast of the United States? Did any wildfires occur during the time when Barack Obama and Biden, did any hurricanes occur during the 8 years that they were in office? Was there damage done along the Gulf Coast to storms? But he's actually putting the blame on, and if something could be done, humanly done, to stop these things, then why didn't Barack Obama and Joe Biden do that when they were in the office?
No, we only got to crisis when Trump got to office.
Right.
Yeah, it's amazing. And, you know, a climate arsonist, it's like, and the point that the president has been making, and he is a climate, a man-made global warming skeptic.
Right.
I think it's okay to call him that. He's a skeptic on that. The point the president has been making, and it was very interesting, there was an Associated Press story this morning on this, is the point the president has been making is forest management. Mm-hmm. When you talk about forest management, there is a way to at least curtail forest fires, wildfires, and that is to do some pre-burning.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say during the winter months, do some pre-burning so that you have areas of forest that are already burned so that it stops a fire started by bad behaving campers or lightning or whatever the case may be. So there is something. There's also the press has been on about doing something about the dead foliage that's down around the bottom of the trees, which is tinder dry, so that when you have a dry period and somebody drops a match, that's all it takes. And so that's what's been called forest management. And so there, it's a combined thing, but you're not going to stop wildfires.
Right.
You're simply not. You're not going to stop. There's nothing man can do to stop a hurricane which begins off the west coast of Africa and moves across the Atlantic into the Gulf or up the east coast of the United States. There is nothing you can do to stop those things. But Joe Biden seems to say it's all the president's fault.
He did. For a story that we actually have airing today, I interviewed two skeptics of what they call catastrophic man-made climate change. One of them was author and junkscience.com founder Steve Malloy. He told me that forest management is the solution for curbing these wildfires out west. Clip 10.
You know, California has wildfires no matter what happens. And you know, if you don't manage the forest, they get really out of control. How they start is, you know, there are a lot of causes. It can be a lightning strike, it can be a utility malfunction, it could be arson, and anything in between. And as long as the conditions are dry, California's going to burn.
You know, speaking of anything in between, it was last week that a gender reveal party was blamed for the for one of the fires. And as the New York Times reported, it wasn't the first time that a gender reveal party has ignited a fire out west. I also spoke with Mark Morano of Climate Depot about Biden's remarks. Here's what Mr. Morano had to say, clip 9.
Well, I mean, Biden has gone full climate astrology. I mean, this is unscientific gibberish. President Obama in 2012 basically said the same thing. You know, the weather's more extreme, and in this election, you can do something about it. And by the way, voters reelected Obama, but guess what? We still had extreme weather, so I guess we didn't get to do anything about it. Well, Biden today, first of all, climate denier is passé. Now you're a climate arsonist unless you support the scientific claims of Al Gore and the United Nations. So what they're doing now is Biden is basically saying, vote for me for better weather.
Steve, go ahead.
You know, they criticized President Trump for being the cause of all this man-made global warming for some reason. In 4 years, he's done that, what they've been complaining about for a dozen. But he is doing something. He was in California yesterday. He met with Gavin Newsom.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned the forest management. Gavin Newsom, all in on anthropogenic or man-made climate change. He's a strong believer. President Trump, as you say, is a skeptic. But those two, nonetheless, found common ground. Gavin Newsom, a little odd, but very complimentary of the way the president was handling things. And I want you to hear an exchange between them yesterday. This is Cut 3.
We have to do a lot about forest management. Obviously, forest management in California is very important.
We have not done justice on our forest management. I don't think anyone disputes that. Please respect, and I know you do, the difference of opinion out here as it relates to this fundamental issue on the issue of climate change.
Absolutely.
A little kumbaya moment there between political foes.
Well, that's not the first time. I mean, Gavin Newsom, Governor Cuomo of New York, all praised the president for what he did in the early stages of the pandemic.
Kate Brown out in Oregon asking for a presidential declaration for her state.
I just think this is when Joe Biden does these kinds of things and says, you know, talks about climate change arsonist, whatever. Was that the phrase he used?
Climate arsonist.
Climate arsonist. I think normal people just, are you kidding me? You know, you're blaming the president for wildfires that have been taking place for decades. You're blaming the president for hurricanes. And he talked about, you know, that suburbs are going to be destroyed and it's Donald Trump's fault. I mean, is that the best that you can give the American people to say you need to vote for Joe Biden? And because the juxtaposition of that on the other end of the scale is, I'm promising to stop all these things, which, Steve, is ridiculous.
Yeah. I'll leave to Chris, who's much more informed on the extent of global warming and how much man is responsible for it, because he's much more invested in that. But I've been hearing this rant for decades, it seems. It was global cooling back in the 70s. Do you remember, Fred?
Oh, yeah.
And they were worried about a new ice age coming, and then it was global warming. And then when they couldn't make up their mind, it became climate change, because that kind of covers everything. I'm skeptical, too.
Yeah, I tell you, do you guys remember a movie back in the mid-90s? Michael Douglas played the president. Mm-hmm. It was called An American President or something of something like that. Mm-hmm. I think it was Annette Bening was his love interest in the film. She was like an environmental lobbyist or lawyer for some environmental group, that. Kind of something of that nature. Go back this week or whenever you have time, watch that film and listen to the statements that characters in that film make. I know it's a fictional film, but listen to the statements they make about the climate. It's literally the same thing we're talking about today, and that movie is almost 30 years old.
Yeah.
Now, as Steve mentioned, they have been talking about this for decades. And as we talked about earlier in the show, when we were talking about how many hurricanes we've had this year, named storms, things like that, it was during the early 2000s when Al Gore was still bitter about losing the 2000 election. He was talking about how we were going to have bigger, more powerful hurricanes. And when Hurricane Katrina came about, he said, see, this is more evidence. Every night on the evening news is like a walk through the Book of Revelations, as Al Gore calls it. Number one, if they call it the Book of Revelations, stop listening to them. Okay? That's my other, that's a sermon for another day. But he talked about how Katrina was evidence of it. We're going to have more powerful storms and things like that. We're at Sally on this year's list. Mm. We're 19 to 25 storms. We're where we're supposed to be in terms of the predictions. And again, many of the predictions since Al Gore made that prediction back in the early 2000s, we've had seasons where we didn't come anywhere close to the number of named storms.
Yeah. So, gee whiz, weather is cyclical. I mean, Trump said yesterday maybe we'll have cooler weather down a couple of years
yeah.
from now.
I talked with Roy Spencer about this. This has been a couple of years ago, but Roy is a weather guy over in the Alabama area, worked with Cal Bisner, maybe still does. And, you know, the argument from people is that we're climate change is driving up temperatures, which is making things warmer, and any moisture that is in the atmosphere is building up in the clouds, and when it rains, that therefore we're having more heavier rainfalls and floods and things of that nature. And that's why a place like Houston gets flooded, you know, with that 50-year rainstorm and stuff like that. But as Roy told me before, Dr. Roy Spencer, you can't have it both ways. It can't be dry and really rainy. Mm-hmm. I mean, to think about it that way, it's kind of it's dumbing down the argument. I mean, you guys remember this and probably talked about it. It's before my time here. 20 years ago, there were people that were saying snow was going to be a thing of the past.
Yeah.
And it's still snowing.
Yeah. Yeah, talk to people in Minnesota and Wisconsin. Yeah.
Right.
They're still getting snow. Hey, was it snowing in Colorado a few weeks ago?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
They got a foot of snow out there.
Earliest ever.
Yeah.
They have a record.
Not a place to try to convince people about global warming 2 weeks ago. Still summertime, folks.
So, hey, what do they do, Chris, when they run out of, get to 26 named storms, they need to go to 27? Do they go to Aardvark and in Llama?
That's a great question. I believe it was in 2005. 2005, the year that Katrina hit, we actually ran into the Z's. Hurricane season ran past the normal season, and it continued on into December, maybe even January of 2006. But I think by that year, we got into like the Greek names. Uh-huh. They didn't know what to do. They just started going with like Alpha, Beta, Charlie, Delta,
I was going to say something like Aardvark or Eeyore or Llama with two letters.
Hey, man. This year we had, you know, Isaias and Nana and yeah, Paulette. Right. I mean, that sounds like, you know, I mean, we've had some different names.
Yeah. All right, Chris, what you got next?
All right. Well, I mentioned this in the news meeting this morning, and I want to mention it because due to the COVID-19 pandemic and the government's response to the coronavirus, a lot of businesses have closed. A lot of businesses have laid off people. As a result, people are hurting for jobs, or maybe they need some additional cash to make ends meet, things like that. There are a number of companies that are starting to hire workers. FedEx is one example today, and CNN had this story. They plan to hire as many as 70,000 seasonal workers to do a lot of the shipping, the packaging, standing at the conveyor belt, loading trucks, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
So even though times are tough and, you know, people aren't necessarily sure where to go, there are companies that are looking to give you a job. Certainly, we had a number of retailers earlier this year, Walmart and some other big box stores, that were looking to give people job opportunities if they lost their job due to the pandemic. So, you know, it may not be a job that you are looking for. It may not be a job that you think you are equipped for, but certainly there are opportunities out there. And I bring that up because we're in the midst of an election cycle in which some candidates, not just presidential candidates, but those running for other offices, they keep pointing out to, you know, the weekly driverless claims on Thursday every week. And they talk about how this is evidence of Donald Trump's America. He did this. He's the reason you don't have a job and things of that nature. There are opportunities out there. You just need to invest the time to look into it. And actually, there have been some places that have wanted to hire or even offer people bonuses and things like that to work maybe in the food service industry. So it may not necessarily be something you're looking for, but do check it out and see what's going on.
It's really what you're talking about is a revolution in the retail world.
Yeah.
The online buying, I mean, even in the last 10 years, has increased incredibly. And there is a price to pay, you know, for the mom-and-pop stores have been under pressure because of this pandemic, which has led to more people buying things online. And correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, but it's kind of like when you get a taste for buying things online from the Amazons and that sort of thing, a lot of people don't want to go back to tracing around stores and looking for things when I can sit in my easy chair at home and press a few buttons. And a lot of these places now, shipments are free. And it's going to arrive at my door, and I can track the parcel. I know where it is, almost to the point where I know the hour where it's going to appear at my front door. I mean, this is mind-boggling to old guys like me when you had to go out to buy everything. And now it's I've seen it with my kids, my two girls. I mean, they do almost all their shopping online. I'm talking furniture.
Oh, yeah.
I'm talking, you know, appliances. They're buying all of this online.
You get a mattress now without laying on it.
Forget about going to the store. So we got a revolution going on here, Steve, and I'm not sure where it's going to take us.
I think all of these things may have been destined to happen anyway, but certainly the COVID pandemic and people having to do this online and living online for months has sped this up. My son-in-law actually owns a FedEx route. He lives in Oregon, but the FedEx route is back in his hometown of San Diego. He has been busy beyond belief. Just managing the schedules and the trucks and everything. It's just amazing how busy and how successful that that particular venture is. It's, man.
You know, and I'll give you an example of just the cultural shift you talked about. You never saw something like that. My kids are totally used to just ordering something or maybe going to the place and picking up what it was that you ordered. We do a lot of our before COVID was a household name, we started doing a lot of the grocery pickup. You just order, you pull into the spot, you call them, they bring your stuff out, you go about your day. Awesome. Okay. But anyway, one Sunday occurred not long ago, and we, for whatever reason, never scheduled a pickup and didn't really fill our order. We didn't have everything planned out. And we pulled into the regular grocery spot. My seven-year-old goes, "Are we going to have to go in?" Like, you know, like, and I turned around and I said, "What do you think I did when I was a kid? Like, we had the Sears catalog, but my parents weren't ordering from that all the time." And then, of course, it was like, what's a catalog, you know?
I know.
Hey, Chris, have you run into the problem where your seven-year-old says to Alexa, "Alexa, buy me a drone," and a $150 drone shows up at your house?
We have not had that yet. She has ordered television seasons of a television show and a movie based on her accidentally clicking on something. What is humorous is if you have like a smart speaker and it's connected to whatever popular account you use for online ordering, it will like glow a certain color. That's to alert you that there's a notification or something. And if you ask the device, what are my notifications, she or he will tell you what the notification is. And you have to be careful if you are a family that does a lot of online buying. You have to be careful because that might be something that you ordered for your kids for your birthday or Christmas or something like that. And so the last thing you want to do is ask them when they're in the same room, what are my notifications? And it's like, your kid's size 7 shoes are on the way. And what, you know, this other, you know, and then the kids get all excited.
Yeah. It's that brave new world. Now there's, you know, we're talking about the impact of the pandemic and the retail world.
Yeah.
Even when the pandemic is over, we're not going back.
No.
These trends, and Steve, I know you've done some stories because this pandemic, the restrictions, a lot of people are wondering with regards to church attendance, because a lot of these churches streaming online, and there's been surveys done that people are getting comfortable sitting in their living rooms, their dens, watching church services on TV. So there's been surveys done, and I think you've done some stories on this that, my goodness, maybe we won't be able to get these people back in the pews when this thing is over.
Yeah, what the number I saw, if I recall correctly, 60% of people who were kind of on the fringe to begin with, unless you were involved in a small group or a Sunday school or in a ministry at the church, if you were just attending on a Sunday morning, 60% of those people, and that's a lot of people in most churches, they're just going to stay home. They found the online church that they like. It might be John MacArthur's church, or something like that. Church. This has been a refining fire. I think the church is going to be stronger at the end of this because it's going to, pare down some of the, I don't know if you call it the wheat and the tares, but it's kind of making people choose. And churches choose. What we were talking yesterday about these churches that decided they're not going to open up for the rest of the year already, the thought of if you really can do that and not your community isn't suffering because of it, then why even open back up at all?
Yeah.
And so I think we're going to have a slimmed down, maybe fitter church coming out of this.
I know when J.D. Greer, who is the president of the SBC, and he has his church there in Raleigh, North Carolina, he announced that they will not hold services until at least the new year. But he remarked at the time that, but we're still going to do the small group thing, in people's houses, gathering. And I think he said something along the line, that's an even stronger venue for discipleship. And I thought, I'm not sure that predicts well for the future for worship services. John MacArthur, in deciding to go ahead against the court decision, one of the things that he has said is that we need to worship. Corporate worship is important. It is biblical. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I join in the concern of those that say, you go along with the pandemic for so long, and this is what MacArthur was willing to do that initially at Grace Community Church. But he says, we can't do that anymore. We simply can't do that anymore. We must have corporate worship. And I'm hoping more pastors get that kind of conviction, Steve.
So we said we're noticing that a lot of small businesses are not going to be able to open back up after this. They're gone for good.
Yeah.
Restaurants and such. Churches, some of those I think will probably be the smaller ones, the ones that were dependent on the Sunday morning offering, and they didn't have a whole lot else to help support the one pastor. I have a feeling a lot of those are going to be hurting and maybe not coming back.
Yeah. So like I say, this pandemic has the potential for some very long-term effects, but I admire what Pastor MacArthur is doing, and I know there are those who disagree. I was reading some of the posts yesterday. I think it was in the Christian Post about those who are disagreeing with Pastor MacArthur, saying that it is a better testimony to abide by what the government is telling you to do. And I think Pastor MacArthur's response to that has been, what we're fighting against is the inconsistency in the policies when it's allowing some to gather. And certainly the protesters are not being condemned by these governments like pastors like Pastor MacArthur. It's going to take a while for this to play out, but I think there are going to be some very long-term changes, and I'm not sure that they're good, whether it's retail or whether it's when it comes to churches. All right, guys, we're going to take a little bit of a break here on today's issues for our news. When we come back, we're going to be talking to the editor of OneNewsNow.com and what that site offers you in the way of information from a Christian perspective. So stay tuned for that. We'll be back right after the break. Don't go away.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.